Good morning, Lagos. This is Dr. Weeba Boer on Power Solutions on Nigeria Info 99.3 FM, the show where we talk about the solutions to Nigeria's power problems. And today we have a special guest named Alwell Nwankwo, who's the country director for the IFC Lighting Global Program. Now, Alwell, we're going to start with a question about where your passion for off-grid energy came from. And I think you have it comes from deeper in your life experience than many other people. So if you can start with that.
Okay. Thank you, Weeba. Good morning, everyone. By the way, let me start by just making a brief correction. I'm the program lead.
Oh, sorry.
For the Lighting Africa program in Nigeria. Let me also start by commending you and your team on the wonderful work you're doing in terms of creating awareness for the off-grid energy sector. As you have rightly said, my coming into this sector, now that I'm thinking about it, looks like something that was inevitable.
Okay.
Really. I grew up in an off-grid, rural off-grid environment. I can tell you that for the 16 out of my first 20 years of my life, I was in a village where there was no electricity, mm-hmm. absolutely no electricity. But of course, sometimes one went to the cities like Aba and so on and so forth. So I think that to fully understand and appreciate the impact of the off-grid energy sector, maybe some of us should spend time in off-grid, environments or like my village.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, today my village has got light.
Okay.
I got electricity.
It's from the grid?
From the grid.
Okay.
Although my parents still complain that for weeks they may not have electricity. Now, having said that, let me just tell you that when I was growing up, we were using basically kerosene lanterns.
Mm-hmm.
And as a student, both in primary school and in secondary school, I was using kerosene lanterns. And it was something of an upgrade, really, or improvement to use candles. Right?
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That was even something great to imagine. I recall clearly that when I was 9 or 10, my grandmother was beaten by a snake.
Okay.
At night.
Okay.
You know, she was going out within the village, and then we heard her cry, and my father ran to the, to the road,
mm-hmm.
and killed, the snake. So for a number of weeks, my grandmother was, busy trying to deal with that situation. Later on, I realized that if she had light, mm-hmm. maybe she could have avoided being bitten by a snake. And for me, my first encounter with, trying to look for solutions for the off-grid energy sector happened when I was maybe 9 or 10,
mm-hmm.
under the tutelage of a cousin of mine. We had a way of constructing things and using all thrown away, dry cell batteries,
okay.
and then using the kind of bulbs you see on torchlights.
Okay.
Stringing wires together and then getting some very little kind of lights. And we feel, in those days, we felt excited.
Right.
And we were looking for a solution, to the darkness in the village. And I also remember that I, for one, on a particular night, within 30 minutes, I had an encounter with two snakes.
Okay.
Within 30 minutes, in the village. And I killed both of them.
Okay.
Okay, somehow. So if I had... Fortunately, we had the moon. The moon was out, so yeah, the village was fairly lit. Otherwise, if it was one of those dark nights, I too would have been bitten by the snake.
Right.
So for me, this is actually
personal.
The first, level of qualification.
Right.
So the second level of qualification is that, okay, let me tell you a little bit about my background. I studied mass communication. That was my first degree. Mm-hmm. I did mass communication. Then I studied marketing. Then I followed this up much more recently with a PhD in media and communication.
Okay.
So virtually all my life, I have actually been, all my working life, mm-hmm. I have actually been practicing marketing.
Okay.
So when the opportunity to actually work in the offbeat energy sector came up, I think I saw the advert sometime in 2013 on LinkedIn. I was a bit reluctant because I felt I hadn't done any work within the development sector, and I wasn't quite excited about applying, but something kept in.
And what kind of companies had you been working for in marketing?
Okay, so I've worked across various sectors of the Nigerian economy. First, I practiced briefly as a journalist.
Okay.
Barely 1.5 years or so. Then I joined UAC of Nigeria as a management trainee.
Okay.
And I was there, became a full manager. I was marketing office products.
Okay.
I was in their division called Peradim then, which was an office equipment business. So we were marketing things like photocopiers, printers, furniture items for the office, air conditioners, and you know, that kind of thing. So I was there for almost 4 years, or 5 years rather. Then I felt something was lacking in my career. I was doing essentially what people call industrial marketing, business to business marketing. I felt that the real fun was actually doing business to consumer marketing.
Okay,
consumer marketing. So I moved over to SC Johnson as the product manager, and I managed the Glade air freshener brand and also the Nixoderm skin ointment brand.
Okay.
I did that for about 4 years, and then I left and moved over to Koscharis, and I was at the Koscharis Technologies. I managed a brand of IT products called Mercury.
Okay.
So I was there essentially for about 4 years plus.
Okay.
Then
everything seems to be 4 years, four or five years. Okay. And then you saw the ad.
No, that happened much later.
Oh, okay.
So after I left Koscharis, I went into the education through publishing sector.
Oh right. Okay.
I went over to Longman Nigeria PLC. I was the head of marketing of Longman for almost 5 years.
Okay.
Yeah, almost not four, but 5 years. Then I moved over briefly to the University of Lagos Press and Bookshop Limited, where I was the managing director for just 6 months before I went to the ISE to run the Latin Africa program.
Okay. Yeah. So you saw the ad and you thought, okay, well, I have this experience as a child, but you didn't really have any exposure to the off-grid energy sector. So how did you end up getting the job? Weren't there people who were, you know, more experience in the space?
So that's interesting. So I shared part of the story I've just shared now.
Okay.
In my application, actually, I applied almost on the last day.
Okay.
Yeah. Because something kept impelling me to apply. Or should I say compelling me to apply. So I eventually applied virtually on the last day. And I narrated this whole story of having lived in the off-grid energy off-grid environment rather, in my village, and I clearly stated that really I really understand what it means to live in the off-grid, and I can deal with the issues of people within the off-grid sector. And I think eventually I got to know that story actually resonated with the IFC guys, because I felt that this is our guy.
Yeah.
And after a whole battery of interviews, quite a long one, I was eventually hired first as a consultant, and then later as a full-time employment.
Right, and I guess in the end, it was the you were basically marketing a new concept and a new product for Nigeria.
Absolutely.
Right, so it was actually a good fit.
And for me, in my career, I've always been, I would say, fortunate to be dealing with something new.
Right.
In virtually all the places I've worked. Yeah.
So now, about 5 years ago, you now moved into this new role in a new sector for you. At that time, solar was hardly known in Nigeria. There wasn't all the energy and all the the activity that's going on now.
Yeah.
So what was the reaction to people that you knew or people even in the IFC about this program and whether it would work in Nigeria?
Okay, let me just backtrack a bit. As far back as 2006, I had on my own got in touch with a Chinese firm because I had the feeling that solar could be a solution to Nigeria's energy problem. So I wrote a Chinese firm that was really doing solar stuff, but the thing was too expensive then. I tell you, when I got their response, I just couldn't follow up because the amount of money involved was, you know, prohibitive. So I let that be. So when I joined this program toward the end of 2014, in Nigeria, it was like Mission Impossible, so to say. And somebody recently confessed to me that when we launched this program early in 2015, he thought we were crazy. But for us in the IFC, we knew exactly what we were doing. And Nigeria would not be the first place we're doing that. The Lighting Africa program had launched in Kenya as far back as 2009.
Okay.
And I have a sense that that has probably contributed to the progress of the Kenya off-grid energy sector.
Right.
Yeah, if you are comparing them with Nigeria, it's as if we're like 5 or 6 years behind them in terms of the evolution of the market. But I've always believed that now that Nigeria is coming into its own, is probably going to dwarf several other countries in Africa. And I'm really excited that today everybody has seen the great potential that the off-grid energy sector holds for a country like Nigeria.
Right.
So then, in 2015, it was difficult to even get people to attend events.
Right.
Yeah. Sometimes we had to provide even vehicles to convey people to events. And I remember one of my colleagues, Oluwakemi, she's still on the program. We had to, you know, actually walk around Alaba, you know, to invite people to events. We went to Aba and we did the same thing in Ariadne Market. In there's another electrical shop market also in Aba. I can't remember what they call it now. So we actually had to do the legwork to get people
to get them to come into the room to learn about
solar products, the whole off-grid thing. But of course, there were some manufacturers that were already in the country or that were looking to come in. For instance, I don't know whether I can mention some of
Of course, no problem.
D-Light.
Okay. They were quite early.
They were quite early. Green Light Planet was also.
They were already here then. Okay.
Then they were operating largely.
Okay.
I think through some of their distributors. Okay. I think they had two then, Total and Simba. So much later they came in. And there were also a few other companies that came in and were part of the launch. For instance, Ovisola was also one of the early companies that came in. Of course, there were quite a number of other.
Right. Companies. And so now, in the early days, what was the program doing to promote this product? And then how has that evolved over the last 4 or 5 years as the industry itself has grown?
So in the early days, one of the critical things we had to do was actually to even create opportunities for business to business engagement.
Right. Even though you wanted to do business to consumer, you were back to business.
Exactly. Ironically, I was back to doing B2B. You know, so we had to create that opportunity for manufacturers to meet potential distributors, for even distributors to also meet the manufacturers. To create opportunity for even the distributors and their manufacturers to present the products to consumers.
Okay.
Right. It was something of a novelty to a lot of the consumers. And also this whole idea of at least getting the sector to start looking at this as an opportunity to address the energy or lighting needs of people in low-income households. So it was like more of a mobilization kind of situation, trying to get everybody to get involved. And in those days we had a lot of focus on consumer education.
Okay.
Yeah, that was very, very critical. And I think it's still critical, although today we have made quite a lot of progress.
Mm-hmm.
So we use road shows extensively in those days to give people the opportunity to touch and feel products. Because sometimes just telling people about products will not be enough.
They needed to
touch and feel. We had the darkroom design that will enable people to see the difference between solar products and the regular kerosene lantern.
Right.
We had to give people information regarding, okay, the cost of kerosene versus the cost of, you know, solar.
Right.
Then we had to educate them on the health implications of inhaling the fumes and all that.
Right. So was this done through the media, through radio, television, etc., or was it more, you know, physically visiting them and traveling around Nigeria?
So we explored all available vehicles.
Okay.
Person-to-person communication was very critical at those roadshows. We also had the media, largely radio, which is widely used.
Right.
And apart from having advertisement on radio, we also had live shows so into which people could call in.
Right.
But one quick lesson we learned from that, you know, pilot stage of engagement was that, okay, people felt these were wonderful products, but they couldn't just afford them
in
terms of bringing out the initial capital outlay.
Right.
Even though they were spending much more than, you know, whatever those products were costing on kerosene and candles and mobile phone charging.
Right.
Okay. So that lesson ultimately made us realize that, look, as much as we were trying to help people in low-income households have access to energy, we needed to also do something about access to finance.
Right.
To get and that made us products, bring microfinance institutions on board to start giving loans to their customers to be able to purchase the product.
Okay. So when did you have the breakthrough that it became no longer such a difficult prospect for the potential customers, but that they were now lining up and there actually wasn't even enough product for them anymore?
Yeah.
At what point did you get to, how quickly did you get to that point?
I think that began to happen around 2016.
Okay.
After we had been working, doing the road shows, doing exhibitions, meeting specialized groups like cooperative societies, farmers, market women. We have done that for about 1 year.
Right.
And we started seeing the breakthrough. But unfortunately, that was around the time, you know, as the market was fully taken off,
the
country's economy crisis
and
it's like the whole thing was rolled back.
Right.
Yeah, but of course, I must commend the persistence of a number of players in the sector who actually stuck by Nigeria and said, okay, we will see this through, and they were there, and we were doing some basic things. In those days, it was difficult to, in some cases, to get stuck.
Right.
Yeah, so we had to scale down some of our campaign elements.
Okay.
But very soon,
yeah,
that was over and things started picking up again.
And now, you know, 2019, you know, there's regulation, there's government programs, there's donors, everybody's sort of in this space now. And there's also, more importantly, you know, dozens of companies that are now doing this work. But you sort of move now towards more the, you know, standards, making sure the standards are of the right level so that the consumers are protected. So maybe talk a bit about that and why standards are so important and how the Lighting Global program works with that.
Okay, so let me also backtrack a little bit to just share with you and also the listeners the various components of our program.
Okay, fine. Yeah.
There are actually five of them.
Okay.
The first one is quality assurance.
Okay.
I will come back to that, which has to do with the standards and also training people, building capacity around supporting the product and making sure the products deliver on their promise. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we have quality assurance. We have market intelligence, which has to do with, just understanding the market and sharing that information with the market. It could come in the form of formal studies. It could also come in the form of just getting data, getting knowledge about the market and sharing with players. Then we have consumer education.
Okay.
That's the third component, which has to do with not just creating awareness, but also enlightening consumers on how to use products and to get the best out of them. Excuse me. Then we have access to finance, which has to do with helping especially consumers have access to, you know, purchase the products and pay over a period of time. which is something the PayGo sector business model also addresses. Then we have business and supply chain development, which has had to do with creating that whole chain that enables the products to move from the manufacturer to the consumer. Okay. So quality is critical because we're dealing with people who live in low-income households. And as I said, I mean, they earn very low incomes. I think it will amount to a double jeopardy.
Okay.
If they invested in the sector and 2-3 months down the line, they have lost their money.
Right.
Because the product simply
And they still don't have light.
So it will be a double jeopardy for them. So quality assurance became like an entry point for the program. Okay. The first thing our parent program did, in those days it was Lighten Africa, but it became Lighten Global. The first thing they did was to develop a set of standards for quality upgrade lighting products. In those days, in those initial days, there were basically solar lanterns. I think initially up to 100 watts.
Okay.
But today, the standards have been expanded to get to involve solar home systems up to 350 watts. Okay. So, every product that our program supports must have passed those very stringent standards, which also includes things like truth in advertising. If you say this thing is going to work for 2 hours, does it really work for 2 hours?
Right. Okay.
So those were critical. Now, it's also important to protect consumers from counterfeit products. And part of the work we have been doing is actually to create knowledge around consumers to enable them to understand the difference between the quality verified products and non-quality verified products. And one of the key, I think, legacies our program would like to leave is to support an organization like the Standards Organization of Nigeria to adopt these standards today that have also become global standards because the International Electrotechnical Commission is now in the process of fully adopting the standard. They have adopted the test protocol. But we hope that maybe before the end of this year, they will adopt that. And then ECOWAS would also be able to adopt. And at the ECOWAS region, our colleagues at the World Bank side are also working with the ECOWAS sub-region to see the standards adopted so that consumers, when they buy, they can go home and actually receive the kind of service they pay for.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So we're going to now go to the phone line to see if there's any callers. So Yvonne, can you play the numbers for us? All right, so while she's working on that, so you're talking about certification, but what is it that the customers need to look for to make sure that they get a product that is Lighting Global certified? Is there a sticker on it, or what is it that they need to look for?
Incidentally, we keep receiving that question. Do we have a call?
Call us on 01-277-0993, 01-277-1993, 01-277-2993, and 01-277-3993. This is Nigeria Info. We are listening.
All right, so while we're waiting for callers, so if you can, so what is it they look for? What is it they need to look for?
Okay, so there is no sticker that they actually look for. But fortunately, we have the various products that we support.
Okay, so let's take the call. Hello, good morning. Ah, it dropped. Okay.
Okay, so we have the various products that we support listed on the website.
Okay.
But it's not everybody that will have access to the website, okay? So part of the work we have done is that in all our marketing communications, we clearly, list the brands that are quality verified, that we're working with in the country. So we are always sharing that information. Somehow, putting sticker simply won't be very practical for our program.
Because someone could put a fake sticker, I guess.
It just won't be very practical for our program.
Okay.
Yeah. So what we do is to actually enlighten the consumers so themselves they can begin to identify the good one.
Okay, good. So let's talk about impact. I know we need a round up soon, but now, you started in 2014, 2015, where it was a very difficult sell. And now you're at the point where there's, you know, so many companies doing this and all that. But what is the impact? How many people are using these solar products now?
So, quickly on impact. Unfortunately, we don't have time now, but I could tell you there are two different ways of looking at impact, quantitative and qualitative. But let me just focus on the quantitative. Now, okay, as I speak, there are over 5 million Nigerians who have bought this product and they are using. Since we started the program, over 5 million people. Consumer education has reached about 70 million people. About 132,000 people have benefited from microloans from MFI worth $4.6 million.
Right.
I wish I could go on and on.
Yeah, wow. So that's, so this is amazing because you're the little boy who grew up in the off-grid village who felt the pain of not having light, and now you've helped bring products that
so
5 million Nigerians.
It's a personal mission for me.
It's a personal
not
mission.
Not just a 9-to-5 work.
So you're an evangelist for the light.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Orwell. This has been a great conversation. Yvonne is telling us we need to round up, but we're going to have you on again to continue this discussion. And one of these days we have to visit your village together and see how it looks now and see whether life has changed.
It's much different.
All right.
Thank you for having me, Weber, and thank you for the great job you're doing for the sector.
Thank you so much. And Lagos, it's been great talking to you, and we look forward to another great conversation next week.